A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about the purchase order. That humble document that used to rattle in on fax machines at his family's photo framing business. And he's asking something that sounds simple but isn't. If it's called an order, why can't the manufacturer just accept it? Why do you need to check inventory and manpower first? And legally, is this thing a contract, an offer, or what exactly?
I love this question because the word order is doing an enormous amount of heavy lifting that it has absolutely no business doing. In everyday language, an order is a command. You order a coffee, the barista makes it. But in B2B, a purchase order lands on your desk and you cannot just start building 500 custom frames. You have to check whether you even can.
Which is where the whole thing starts to feel like a misnomer. Daniel's basically asking, is the purchase order lying to us?
In a sense, yes. Legally, a purchase order is not an order at all, under the Uniform Commercial Code. Article 2, which governs the sale of goods in the United States. A purchase order is an offer. It's the buyer saying, we would like to buy these things on these terms. The contract doesn't exist until the seller accepts.
The fax machine spits out a piece of paper that says, order, in bold letters at the top, and legally it's more like a handshake invitation.
And the seller can say no. They can say, we don't have the materials, or our production line is booked for 6 weeks, or we looked at your credit and we're not comfortable extending net 60 terms. None of that fits the word order. If I order you to do something, you don't get to run a capacity check first.
Which means every purchase order arrives with this built-in tension. The buyer thinks they've placed an order. The language reinforces that. But the manufacturer is looking at it thinking, this is a request I need to validate before it becomes real.
Daniel's framing store example captures exactly that gap. A PO for 500 custom frames comes in. The wood supplier might be backordered. Three frame styles might require tooling changes. Half the team might be out with the flu. The word order implies inevitability, but the operational reality is conditional acceptance.
Where does that leave us before we even get into the legal weeds? We've got a document that sounds binding, feels binding to the person who sent it, but is actually just the opening move in a negotiation that hasn't happened yet.
The fascinating part is that sometimes it is closer to an order, and sometimes it really isn't, depending on whether there's a master agreement already in place. But the baseline, the default legal reality, is that a purchase order is an offer that requires acceptance. Calling it an order is a historical artifact from a time when commercial relationships were simpler and trust was higher.
A historical artifact that's still printing out of modern ERP systems and landing in procurement inboxes every second of every business day.
The language fossilized, but the legal and operational complexity grew up around it. So now we have this document that wears the costume of a command, but functions as a proposal.
Which is exactly the rabbit hole Daniel's pointing us toward. If it's not really an order, what is it? And when does it actually become binding?
Let's start with what a purchase order actually is on paper. It's a commercial document issued by a buyer to a seller that says, here's what we want, how many, at what price, delivered when. Item codes, quantities, unit prices, totals, shipping address, billing address. It looks like an invoice that hasn't grown up yet.
Which is probably the first thing that confuses people. A purchase order and an invoice sit next to each other in a filing cabinet, and they look nearly identical. Same line items, same quantities, same prices. But one comes before anything happens, and the other comes after.
That's the key distinction. In the consumer world, when you buy a coffee, the transaction is one event. You order, you pay, you receive, all in about 45 seconds. The receipt is a record of a completed sale. In B2B, the purchase order is a pre-transaction document. Nothing has happened yet. No money has moved. No goods have shipped. No contract exists. It's the opening move.
The receipt at the coffee shop is proof something already happened. The PO is a statement of intent that something should happen.
The invoice is what the seller sends after they've shipped the goods, saying, now you owe us money. So the sequence is purchase order, then fulfillment, then invoice, then payment. The PO sits at the very beginning of that chain, which is why calling it an order creates all this confusion. An order in everyday language sits at the end of a decision. You've decided, now execute.
Whereas in B2B, the decision hasn't been made yet. The buyer has decided, but the seller hasn't.
And that's the core tension Daniel's question exposes. The word order implies a command, or at minimum, a request that will be fulfilled. But legally and operationally, a purchase order is an offer that requires acceptance. It's not the final word, it's the first word.
Which makes you wonder why we still call it that. If I send you a document that says offer at the top, nobody's confused about what happens next. But order. The language itself is doing work it shouldn't be doing.
It does real damage. I've seen smaller businesses get into trouble because someone in sales sees a purchase order come in, thinks, great, we got an order, and starts allocating resources before anyone has checked whether the terms are acceptable or the credit is approved or the inventory exists. The word creates a psychological commitment that the law doesn't back up.
The PO sits in this strange middle ground. It's more than an inquiry, but less than a contract. It's a proposal wearing the clothes of a conclusion.
That's before we even get into what happens when the seller responds with their own document that has different terms. But the foundational point is this. A purchase order is not a receipt, it's not an invoice, and it's not a binding contract. It's an offer. The contract forms when, and only when, the seller accepts it. Let's pull on that thread. Under UCC Article 2, when the seller receives a purchase order, they have a choice. Accept it, reject it, or accept it with modifications. And that third option is where things get legally fascinating and practically dangerous.
Accept it with modifications, meaning the seller says, yes, we'll fill this, but actually on our terms, not yours.
And this happens constantly in B2B because the seller almost never just signs the buyer's PO and sends it back. They issue their own document, an order acknowledgement, a sales order confirmation. And that document typically has the seller's standard terms and conditions on the back or in the fine print. Warranty disclaimers, liability caps, payment terms, governing law. Things the buyer's PO may not have addressed or addressed differently.
Now you've got two documents that both claim to set the terms. The buyer sent a PO that says one thing, the seller sends back an acknowledgement that says something else.
This is the battle of the forms. UCC Section 2227, which is genuinely one of the most litigated sections in all of commercial law. The basic rule is this: a definite and timely acceptance operates as an acceptance even if it states additional or different terms, so the contract forms. But then the question is, whose terms govern?
Which is where it gets messy, I assume.
Between merchants, additional terms in the acceptance become part of the contract unless the original offer expressly limited acceptance to its own terms, or the new terms materially alter the contract or the buyer objects within a reasonable time. So if the seller's acknowledgement adds a 2% early payment discount that the buyer's PO didn't mention, that might slide in. If it caps liability at the purchase price in a way that would gut the buyer's remedies, that's a material alteration and probably doesn't become part of the deal.
The purchase order is the opening salvo in what might become a quiet war of fine print. The buyer fires off their terms, the seller fires back theirs, and somewhere in the middle a contract exists with terms nobody fully agreed on.
Here's the practical nightmare. Most businesses don't even notice this is happening. The buyer sends a PO, the seller sends an acknowledgement, someone in accounts payable files both, and nobody compares the boilerplate. The contract exists, goods ship, invoices get paid. But if something goes wrong, a defect, a late delivery, a dispute over payment, suddenly everyone's digging through their documents trying to figure out what the actual terms were.
Which brings us back to Daniel's framing store. The PO comes in for 500 frames. The manufacturer doesn't just stamp accepted and start cutting wood. They check raw materials, labor capacity, whether the delivery timeline is realistic. That operational check is essentially the gap between receiving an offer and accepting it.
And legally, the manufacturer is under no obligation to accept at all. The PO is not a command. If the wood supplier is back-ordered for 6 weeks and the buyer wants delivery in 3, the correct response is to reject the PO or propose new terms. But the word order creates this psychological pressure. The buyer expects compliance, and the seller feels obligated to comply. That tension is what Daniel was sensing from the manufacturer's side.
Then there's the credit dimension. Daniel asked whether a PO can be raised and paid on credit terms. The answer is absolutely yes. Net 30, net 60, sometimes net 90 in certain industries. But the credit risk isn't managed by the PO itself.
The PO might reference payment terms, but the actual credit relationship is established elsewhere. Through a credit application the buyer filled out, through a master agreement that sets the overall commercial terms, or through trade references the seller checked before approving the account. The PO says, we'll pay in 30 days, but the seller's willingness to extend those 30 days depends on a credit decision that happened before the PO ever arrived.
The PO can promise payment terms, but it can't create them. If you're a new buyer with no credit history and you send a PO that says net 60, the seller is going to ignore that and probably demand payment up front or on delivery.
This is where the acknowledgement document becomes crucial. The seller's acknowledgement doesn't just say, we got your order. It says, we accept your order on the following terms. And those terms often include the actual payment conditions the seller is willing to extend based on the credit review they've done. If the buyer's PO said net 60, but the seller's acknowledgement says net 30, and the buyer doesn't object, net 30 may become the term of the contract.
Under that same UCC 2207 logic,
the acknowledgement is the document that formalizes acceptance and creates the binding contract. It goes by many names: order acknowledgement, sales order confirmation, purchase order acceptance. But whatever it's called, that's the moment the legal rubber hits the road.
The sequence is, buyer issues a PO, which is an offer. Seller validates inventory, capacity, and credit. Seller issues an acknowledgement, which is the acceptance. Then goods ship, invoice follows, payment happens. The PO is step one, in a process that has at least 4 or 5 more steps before anyone actually gets paid.
The acknowledgement is where the seller gets to push back on terms they can't or won't accept. If the buyer's PO demands delivery in 2 weeks, but the seller's lead time is 4, the acknowledgement should state 4 weeks. If the buyer doesn't object, that becomes the delivery term. Silence can be acceptance in this context, which is why procurement professionals lose sleep over this stuff.
The purchase order isn't just a misnomer. It's a misnomer that creates legal risk. The buyer thinks they've ordered something, but what they've actually done is made an offer that the seller can accept, reject, or rewrite. And the rewriting happens in a document that often looks like a simple confirmation, but is actually reshaping the entire deal.
Now all of this gets reshuffled when there's a master agreement in place. This is where the purchase order transforms from an offer into something closer to what Daniel was actually asking about, an instruction to execute.
Because the heavy legal lifting already happened before the PO ever existed.
A manufacturer signs a master supply agreement with a retailer. Pricing, quality specs, liability, payment terms, delivery windows, all negotiated and locked in. That contract is already binding. The PO that arrives 6 months later isn't an offer anymore, it's a call-off. The buyer is saying, under the terms we already agreed to, send us 200 units of SKU 14.
The PO goes from being the opening move in a negotiation to being a logistical trigger. It still says order at the top, but now that word actually makes sense. The seller really is being ordered to execute under an existing framework.
The seller's acknowledgement changes too. In a master agreement context, the acknowledgement isn't forming a new contract. It's confirming that the release falls within the scope of the existing one. Quantities within agreed minimums and maximums, delivery dates within the agreed window. The seller can still push back if something doesn't fit, but they're not negotiating terms from scratch.
Which means the misnomer question Daniel raised, is purchase order the wrong name, actually depends entirely on context. In a spot purchase with no prior relationship, it's absolutely a misnomer. It's an offer pretending to be an order. But under a master agreement, it's closer to the real thing.
This is where the terminology gets inverted in some industries. Automotive and aerospace use what's called a blanket purchase order. The buyer issues one PO that covers 1,000 units over 12 months. but that PO doesn't trigger any individual shipment. Instead, the buyer issues release orders, one per month, say, for 80 units each.
Now the document called the order is actually the umbrella, and the real operational instruction is called a release.
The terminology flips. The purchase order becomes the container, and the release order is the thing that actually says, ship this now. If you're working in aerospace procurement, you live in this inverted world where the PO is the slow strategic document and the release is the urgent tactical one.
Which must confuse everyone who enters that industry from somewhere else.
I've talked to procurement people who moved from retail to aerospace and spent their first month wondering why nobody was shipping anything against the POs they issued. They didn't realize they also needed to issue releases.
The PO wears multiple hats depending on the commercial context. Offer, call off, umbrella. And that's before we even get to what it does inside the buyer's own organization.
This is the layer most legal discussions miss. A purchase order is a control document. Inside the buying company, it's what authorizes expenditure against a budget. The finance department won't pay an invoice unless it matches a PO that was properly approved. It's an audit trail. Who requested this? Who approved it? What cost center does it hit? The legal function of forming a contract is almost secondary to the internal control function.
Even if the legal side is messy, offer versus acceptance, battle of the forms, the PO is doing indispensable work just as a governance tool. It's the thing that prevents someone in operations from ordering $50,000 of raw materials on a handshake.
That's why the document survives despite the terminology being legally misleading. You could rename it a purchase offer and be more accurate, but you'd lose a century of institutional habit. Everyone from the warehouse manager to the CFO knows what a PO means operationally, even if the legal meaning is more nuanced. The PO is the unit of budgetary control, the atomic particle of procurement.
To answer Daniel's question directly, is purchase order a misnomer? The answer is, it depends which hat it's wearing. In a spot buy with no prior agreement, yes, it's an offer, and calling it an order is legally misleading. In a master agreement context, it's closer to an instruction, and the name fits better. In a blanket PO scenario, it's neither, it's a framework, and the release order does the actual ordering.
That's before we talk about what happens when AI procurement agents start issuing and accepting POs automatically, which I suspect is where this is all heading.
That sounds like where we're going next. But first, let's land the practical side, because understanding the theory is one thing, not getting sued is another.
If I'm running a business, on either side of this, here's what I'd actually do. First, and this sounds obvious, but I promise it's not in practice, never treat a purchase order as a binding commitment until you've issued a formal acknowledgement. Train your sales team on this explicitly. The moment a PO arrives, the correct internal language is, "We've received an offer," not, "We got an order."
Which is a harder cultural shift than it sounds. Salespeople are wired to celebrate the order. Telling them they haven't actually closed anything yet is like telling a kid the wrapped box under the tree might just be socks.
Operations needs the same training because they're the ones who feel the pain if someone in sales promised delivery in 2 weeks without checking whether the production line could handle it. The acknowledgement document is your shield. It's the moment you get to say yes, and here's how, or yes, but on these terms, or simply no.
What about from the buyer's side? If I'm Daniel's framing store sending out POs, how do I avoid getting quietly rewritten by the seller's acknowledgement boilerplate?
This is the second actionable move, and it's surprisingly simple. Include a clause in your purchase order that says something like, "This purchase order is expressly limited to the terms stated herein." And seller's acknowledgement constitutes acceptance of all terms in this purchase order. That one sentence can win the battle of the forms before it starts, because under UCC 22207, if the original offer expressly limits acceptance to its own terms, the seller's additional terms don't automatically slide in.
You're preemptively closing the door the seller's fine print would walk through?
Most buyers don't do this. They use whatever PO template their ERP system spat out in 2003 and never look at the boilerplate. But that boilerplate is doing legal work whether you read it or not, so you might as well make it work for you. A procurement attorney can draft the right language in about 20 minutes, and it can save you from a nightmare if a shipment goes wrong and suddenly you're fighting over whose liability cap applies.
For the recurring relationship, which is most B2B procurement once you get past the first transaction, Daniel's framing store probably ordered from the same molding supplier every month, That's where the master agreement becomes worth the legal fees.
Third actionable point. If you're buying or selling with any regularity, invest in a master supply agreement. It doesn't have to be 100 pages. 10 pages can cover pricing mechanisms, quality standards, payment terms, delivery windows, liability, and what happens when things go wrong. Once that's signed, every subsequent PO is just a release against it. No more battle of the forms on every transaction. No more wondering whose boilerplate governs.
It removes that psychological tension we talked about. The PO arrives and everyone knows exactly what it means because the framework is already established. The word order actually starts making sense.
It also makes the credit conversation cleaner. The master agreement can specify the credit limit and payment terms once, rather than negotiating them implicitly through every PO and acknowledgement. The credit risk gets assessed upfront, documented once, and referenced thereafter. The PO just triggers the release of goods under terms everyone already agreed to.
Which brings us to the fourth one. And this is the one I suspect most businesses are getting wrong right now. The automated workflow problem.
This is where procurement software creates legal risk that nobody notices until something breaks. Modern systems, SAP Ariba, Coupa, whatever, can be configured to automatically accept purchase orders that match certain criteria. PO arrives, system checks that the price and quantity are within tolerance, and bam, acknowledgement issued. No human ever looked at it.
If the system accepted a PO for 500 frames, but your wood supplier just went bankrupt and you can't source materials, congratulations. You may have just entered a binding contract you cannot fulfill.
The fourth actionable item is, audit your PO2 acknowledgement workflow. If your system is auto-accepting POs without validating actual inventory and actual production capacity, you're creating legal exposure. The automation is efficient, but efficiency at creating unfulfillable contracts is not the kind of efficiency you want.
The fix is building a validation gate between receipt and acceptance. Someone, or at minimum, a system with real-time inventory and capacity data, has to confirm the thing can actually be done before the acknowledgement goes out.
This is where the operational and legal finally converge. The legal framework says acceptance creates the contract. The operational reality says you need to check inventory and capacity before accepting. The gap between those two things is where businesses get sued. Closing that gap, either with a human check or a capable automated one, is the single most practical thing you can do with everything we've discussed. Where does this leave us? We've got a document that's been called an order for over a century, but legally, it's an offer. Operationally, it's a validation trigger, and in some industries, it's an umbrella that doesn't actually order anything at all. And now we're about to hand the whole thing to machines.
That's the forward question, isn't it? Daniel's been working in AI and automation for years. He's probably watching this space more closely than most. What happens when the purchase order is issued by an autonomous procurement agent and accepted by another one?
The technology is already creeping in. SAP Ariba has AI features that can auto-generate POs from requisitions. Coupa has something similar. But right now, the acceptance side still has a human in the loop somewhere. Someone approving the acknowledgement, someone checking the capacity dashboard. The question is whether we're heading toward fully automated contract formation.
Whether we should be.
There's an argument that machine-readable smart contracts could finally align the terminology with the reality. If a PO is an offer, and the seller system can instantly validate inventory, capacity, and credit through real-time APIs, then acceptance could happen in seconds. The PO would actually function like an order. You send it, the system checks everything automatically, and if all the gates pass, the contract forms immediately.
The word order stops being a misnomer because the operational gap closes. No more waiting for someone to check the wood supplier and the labor schedule. The machines do it in real time.
That's plausible. Real-time inventory visibility is already common in large enterprises. Production capacity APIs are less common but growing. Credit decisioning is already heavily automated. You can imagine a world where a PO hits the seller's system. The system queries three APIs, and within 300 milliseconds, the acknowledgement is issued and the contract exists.
Which sounds efficient and also terrifying, depending on how much you trust the APIs.
That's the rub. If the inventory API says you have the raw materials, but the warehouse actually got flooded last night and the system hasn't updated, you just entered a binding contract for goods you can't produce. The speed is impressive right up until the moment it creates liability faster than a human could have caught the error.
the human in the loop isn't just bureaucratic drag. It's insurance against the gap between what the system thinks is true and what's actually true.
That's why I suspect we'll see a hybrid model for a long time. The AI procurement agents will handle the routine stuff, the repeat orders under master agreements where the terms are settled and the capacity is predictable. But for first-time transactions, large orders, or anything with unusual specs, the human acknowledgement will persist. Not because the technology can't do it, but because the cost of getting it wrong is too high.
Which means the purchase order will keep wearing multiple hats. For some transactions, it'll finally earn the name order. For others, it'll remain the offer it's always been legally. The document won't change. The speed and confidence of the acceptance will.
I think that's actually the right answer to Daniel's question about whether it's a misnomer. It's a misnomer that's slowly becoming less of one as the technology catches up to the language. The purchase order has been waiting 100 years for the operational capability to match its name. We're almost there.
Almost, but not quite. And in the meantime, the document keeps doing what it's always done. Controlling budgets, creating audit trails, and occasionally surprising someone who thought they'd closed a deal when they'd only opened a conversation.
The purchase order, a misnomer, an offer, a control document, and occasionally, when the stars align and the master agreement is signed and the APIs are working, an actual order.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1810s, physicist David Brewster discovered that spider silk exhibits birefringence. It splits light into two polarized rays traveling at different speeds. Under a polarizing microscope, a single strand of spider silk glows in vivid colors that reveal its internal molecular structure, essentially making it a naturally occurring optical stress map.
Spider silk is also a diagnostic instrument.
I'm not sure what to do with that information, but I'm glad I have it.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back soon with whatever Daniel sends us next.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.